right there, so she's got a chance now. Is that what you're trying to say?
Okay, I think that's true, that it is, the exceptions process is loosened up some under the proposed language.
Ron, just to answer this question.
Ron Ebert, Department of Land Conservation and Development. Representative Anderson, when a jurisdiction justifies an exception and the commission acknowledges that exception, that's as far as we go. The counties normally put it in some sort of rural residential zoning, and we don't say anything about the minimum lot size. That's left up to the county. So under the new exceptions process, if there's a built and committed exception that's, or another kind of exception that's justified for rural residential housing, then it's up to the county to set the standard for minimum lot size. It's usually based on slope or septic tank approval or whatnot.
And if my county said 5 acres is going to be minimum instead of 10, they go through a plan amendment?
No, that wouldn't even be a plan amendment. If we've approved a large number of exceptions in Douglas County with varying lot sizes, that's usually set out in the zone. The county would simply amend the text of its zone to say instead of having a 5-acre minimum, we're going to have a 2-acre minimum. So it wouldn't necessarily be a plan amendment unless the county had set that standard in the plan. Most counties don't do that. They leave that to the zoning ordinance.
What are the odds of it being approved by you?
It already has been for Douglas County. We don't review the lot sizes in exception areas, except to make sure they meet septic tank standards, work through the DEQ process.
I think Representative Anderson, too, that all Elizabeth was trying to say is that it's available, but there's never any guarantees under that process. It's just available to be used.
Well, I'm just worried that my county might say we want to allow 5-acre lots, and it comes through the process, and we get appealed and get disallowed.
It would get challenged and appealed through, I'm not sure what basis. It wouldn't be a question of whether the exception was justified. The exception is justified to a goal when you show the land has been built and committed to other uses, not on the basis of what lot size you're proposing to allow in the future. It's what the condition of the land is now. And most county ordinances even have variance provisions which say even if we have a 10-acre minimum in certain circumstances set out in the ordinance, we'll allow lots smaller.
I'm still dubious, but go ahead.
Why don't you? Thank you, Ron. Elizabeth?
Okay. The only change in the divisions languages on line 14, we took out not larger than the minimum. Section 4A is the substantial evidence provision. Section 5 is the new language is on page 5, subsection 2. That's the attorney's fees in hardship cases. And I hope, Representative Trahern, that I wrote that.
Much better, thank you.
Good. Section 6, at least on page 5, there are no changes from the B. Engrossed version.
Again, just a technical question. These are conditional uses for exclusive farm use, correct?
Subsection 1 are permitted uses, not conditional uses.
These are permitted uses.
Right. Subsection 2, beginning on line 13 of page 6, begins the conditional uses.
Line 13?
Yes.
And this is EFU.
Okay, you're right. In conditional EFU, uses, yes. These are permitted uses. I've changed that, right? Under these two, subsection 1 and subsection 2, permitted and conditional uses, how do you then And I know you were talking about it earlier in chapter 215. How do you cross-reference this to make sure that these are also used in marginal lands?
Oh, back.
How are you doing? Is that on page 2, that line 26 and 27?
No.
Where?
The, well, if I understand what you're asking me,
well,
in the list of uses for
right.
marginal lands, we say, I have to find which provision it is, top of page 4, the non-residential uses authorized in EFU zones.
Okay, there it is.
Okay.
And then 1 and 2. Oh, thank you.
Okay. Where were we? So page 6, continuing on through the permitted uses in an EFU zone. Chair Hooley, you and I discussed lines 1 through 4. They're the same as they were in the B. Engross version, and your explanation of that is correct. It allows the house to be put on a small lot that is part of a larger farm unit. I would change it to farm operation. I didn't get that in here.
Page 6, top.
What line?
Right. So if you had a farm operation that included 4 different lots, all of different sizes, as long as the entire farm operation is as large as the minimum lot size, it doesn't matter what the actual size of the lot is within that operation.
Okay. Is there some way to clean up that language?
I think it's clear
okay.
already after my reading it again.
Okay. Because okay. We were talking about that the other day, and
right.
what I said and what you said were different. So,
right.
Representative Bradbury.
Well, I was talking to one of my planners in Curry County, and maybe Ron can help me on this, I don't know. They apparently do not use a minimum lot size in the farm zone.
This only applies to counties that do have a minimum lot size.
So there are counties that don't, but that doesn't apply to.
Right.
No, this would be if you had a 5-acre parcel and a 30-acre parcel and a 200-acre parcel, and that's all one farm operation, you could put your your dwelling on the 5-acre parcel as long as you added the 5 and the 20 and the 300 and they met the minimum lot size.
Right.
And as long as the county had a minimum lot size
yeah.
for farming.
What happens if they don't have a minimum? Any
no, then yeah. then there's no equivalent provision for those counties.
What does happen
if they don't have?
Okay, then yeah, you have to go down for.
Oh, then you go down.
Go
to the
down
other
to the other tests, right?
Madam Chairperson,
Representative Priestley.
The other test is in line 21. Is that what you're talking about?
It begins. On line 17 for a dwelling in conjunction with farm use.
Can the minimum lot size, does it have to be all owned or can it be leased? Part of it?
Well, I'd like to know what the intent was in what a farm unit is or what a farm operation is. Whoever can answer that question. Looks like we may have something we need to clarify.
Lois Carnegie, Agriculture for Oregon. Our intent was that it include the option of leasing as part of the operation. We know operations where the base of ownership is fairly small, but nevertheless the operation is larger. And somehow if there's an ownership of a small number of acres, but it is a commercial farm operation extending over several hundred acres, as you described, then certainly that is legitimate. It is legitimate for a county to authorize a farm dwelling on one of those parcels. Is that answered?
So you, Lois, your intention was the leasing also?
Right.
No, let's keep going. Keep going. Just plugging through. Okay.
Down on lines 10 through 12 is the hardship provision for EFU. It's exactly the same as it is for the marginal
page
lands.
Six.
Page 6, lines 10 through 12. And then beginning with line 17, we're in the conditional use portion for EFUs. We have the test for farm dwellings. And it is the same as it was in the B engrossed version. I would change, everywhere it says farm unit, I'd change it to farm operation when I redo this, just so that we're consistent with what the language we use at the beginning of the bill.
Madam Chairperson?
Yes, Representative Priestley.
Now, Mrs. Carnegie just gave us the intent of what farm unit was, and now farm unit's going to be substituted for farm operation. So
well,
that's going to mean the same, is it?
It's going to mean the same thing. There was one change down on line 27. It now says if the lot or parcel rather than if the farm unit or woodlot. That was a requested change. And on page 7 is the continuation of that test for dwellings. That don't meet the size requirements of the first test in paragraph A. And
Madam Chair,
Representative Bradbury.
Just explain to me why it wouldn't, if it wouldn't. Wouldn't it make sense in line 19 to say that instead of saying the line reads now farm unit or woodlot, if the farm unit or woodlot, wouldn't it make sense to say farm, you're going to change to operation or woodlot, if the lot or parcel?
Well, that's a question that I have. We made that change down here, and I'm not sure whether or not that we want to do the same thing. Are we talking about putting a dwelling on a lot if it's part of a farm operation that is 20 or more acres, or does, I think that would make it more equivalent to what is up in G that we were just talking about for minimum lot size. In other words, the actual lot
you're
putting it on is smaller.
You're right.
Person who leases might only have 5 acres, should take home.
Oh, you're right.
Is that, that's the intent?
So it should stay the way it is.
Where was that you just read that? Because I'm interested in that part, and I didn't.
Line 19, page 6.
Thank you.
In the test, the language on lines 1 through 5 of page 7, some questions have been raised, and I think the language needs some work. Let's see if I can point out all of the problems. First of all, I am no longer clear on which part of this test is going to apply to a woodlot and which part is going to apply to farm crops. And I think I may need some help from Russ Niebaum and anyone else who can contribute to explain what the intent of that was so that I can write it to follow that intent.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, Russ Niebaum, Marion County Planning Director. In item A, beginning on line 1, you in effect have two tests. The first one talks about producing at least $10,000 in annual gross income in 2 consecutive years. And then you have a second test that I think was intended to refer to a woodlot because it uses the phrases continuing to gross an average over the growth cycle of $10,000 a year. So like we've done in the original income test, we've mixed the farm income test and the woodlot income test in the same sentence.
Right.
Then in sub B, beginning on line 4, we have added another test in, which is an alternate test that primarily focuses on farm activities, because it's talking about perennials or trees capable of producing upon harvest an average of at least $10,000 in annual gross income. Mm-hmm. And if B was interpreted to be a woodlot, then all the person would have to show you is that he's got enough trees on there that if he cuts them all down, he's got $10,000 and then he can qualify for a house. And I don't think that was the intent.
I think that was the intent, was like grapes and
that's right,
and nursery, shrubbery, that kind of stuff.
My suggestion to Elizabeth and to the committee would be that we take the portion of the farm test in A, mm-hmm. and say $10,000 in annual gross farm income in two consecutive years, and then go to an OR, which would be sub B on line 4, so that both of the farm income tests are related, and then have a sub B that would in effect contain the woodlot criteria, which would be separate from the farm criteria. As it is now, we kind of have a mishmash.
Madam Chair.
You, Russ, would you put the perennials and the grapes and all of that in under the 10,000
in farm income?
Annual gross farm income, and be very specific on the woodlot when you talk about is capable of continuing to grow.
That's right.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
I'm unclear. If we take 10,000 years over the growth cycle, or take 10,000 year in annual for forest, the average growth cycle is 80 years. Now you're looking at $800,000. Now you're looking 80 years out in the future. Are you taking today's dollars, or are you taking the dollars 80 years from now?
Representative Anderson, I think you're taking today's dollars, first of all, and you're talking about an income that you would produce if you cut it all down in 1 year, but when you do, if the growth cycle of trees is 80 years, you're not going to cut them all down in 80 years. You're going to be replanting and cutting some down every year if you want to sustain some kind of an income off of it, I would think.
That's still $800,000 of trees sitting there, you know, in theory. What kind of an operation that is, I'm not clear. I wish we had some foresters involved.
Madam Chair?
Representative Pugh.
I don't think that's an accurate assumption that it's necessarily $800,000. I haven't thought that through, but that doesn't seem to ring clear. Is there somebody that could discuss that?
Well, if you have to produce $10,000 per year over the growth cycle, that is, and that's 80 years, then you've got $800,000.
In 80 years.
In 80 years. You have to, yeah.
All I'm saying is if you're in a clear-cut operation, you've got to, at the end of 80 years, if you clear-cut it, it's got to be worth $800,000.
I guess you're wanting to know how many acres basically,
yeah,
that would take to do that.
What are the restrictions when you look at it that way?
I don't
way.
Know.
Dick, do you have an answer?
Richard Benner from 1000 Friends. When this income test was being discussed and Dave Steer was in the room, and I don't know whether he's here or not, and when Cliff Lamb from the Small Woodland Owners Association was here, I think what they were telling you is that the amount of land it takes to produce $10,000 over the growing cycle, $10,000 annually, is going to be a function to a certain extent of the quality of the land. And what Cliff Lamb said is that if you take average forest land, that is about site class 3, and you assume that the stumpage value is what people have been getting in recent days, like about $150 per thousand, you can convert the thousand board feet to cubic foot site class. In other words, you can tell how much cubic foot site index 120 can produce in thousand board feet. So it's not difficult to calculate how much land of a given quality can produce $10,000 in annual income over the growing cycle. And I think the figure that he mentioned for this hypothetical site of site index 120 is it would be capable of producing 66 acres would be capable of producing $10,000 annually over a growing cycle. The acreage would become smaller as your land became better, larger as it became worse. It would become smaller as you increased management, as you intensified your management.
Representative Traeger.
At some point, and I don't think we need to go into it now because we're going to obviously discuss this issue quite a bit, but I would like to know what 50 cubic feet per acre, because that's in the bill. In southern Oregon, where it's relatively dry, or eastern Oregon, using the cubic feet that we already have in the bill, roughly how many acres that would take to produce a $10,000 annual gross income. And don't do it now, but I would like to see that at some point. It's my guess it'd be around 640 acres.
Well, Representative Traeger, one thing to bear in mind, and I obviously can't answer your question without doing some research.
I realize that. That's
what but I'm one thing to bear in mind that is we're talking about the test here, it's only in the EFU zone. So much of the land that, like a 640-acre piece of site index 50 land, is likely to have a forest zone on it. It's not going to be covered by this.
Okay. Then we also have in this section the problem of which years. It just says in two consecutive years, and it doesn't say consecutive to what. So first of all, we need a date. Either 2 years before the application is made, but are we talking about the calendar year? So it would be the two consecutive calendar years before the calendar year in which the application is made, or April 15th to April 15th, as I mentioned.
Mr. Chairperson.
Representative Priestley.
Can't we just leave it to let the person define whatever two groups of 12 months he wants to pick and just leave it float like that? Isn't that wrong?
You could do that, and then if they could come in 1983 and give you 1945 and 1956 as two, well, no, they have to be consecutive, so 1945 and 1947. If you don't make some kind of specification. The next section where I made some changes between here and the Bee Engrossed Bill is down in lines 16 through 19 on golf courses. There's been some questions about whether or not the packet whether or not that was supposed to be left out. I'm sorry if it was.
Well, forget it. It was not part of the motion, but it's there.
Okay. Saturday morning, all I could really do was read that language and work from it.
So what's about golf courses? See, I didn't read it.
So that was the...
They're in or out in Farm New South. Allowed,
currently they're allowed, and this was the recommendation from the Ag for Oregon, which was on the last page, which wasn't part of the motion that we went through last Friday. I lose track of time for Saturday. But it's obviously a topic of conversation, so let's just go on.
I did not make any changes clear through the rest of the conditional uses in EFU zones, or don't believe I made any in subsection 3. So we're down to page 9.
On page 7, line 14, why do we have it a nonprofit community organization? I'm thinking in terms of perhaps a conservation organization buying some marshland or something. Wouldn't necessarily be a community organization. that make any difference?
Yeah, are you, I'm not sure what you're asking me. I mean, the policy decision was to restrict this to nonprofit. I mean, that's the existing language.
I'm asking about the word community. That's the existing language.
That's the existing language in the statute is nonprofit community organization.
While we're on that, I might say that Representative Hooley and I had an agreement to move the private parks and playground back into the bill and was inadvertently left off the discussion last Friday. So.
Okay.
Well, that's two. Now you only need three more.
That's right.
Mr. Chair.
Just go ahead. Representative Trager.
Would that, just a question to kind of get prepared on, would that be accomplished by putting the old language back in the C that's been fractured out?
Well, initially, before they made the distinction between, or they limited it to not including private, we had merged what were the old C and D into one, and I would try and do that again just to simplify, but it would, we could accomplish whatever you decide fairly easily that way.
Mr. Chairman?
That's me now.
Basically. I'm wondering whether we should ask questions because which way we're going on this, but the hunting and fishing preserves, are they allowed? They would be allowed?
As conditional uses, as they are in existing law.
That's a decision this committee will have to make.
The next changes are on page 9. Down in subsection 4. And this is the lot of record provision for exclusive farm use zones. First of all, it's the lot size is limited to 3 acres in this draft, which is a change from the 2 in the B engrossed. And then the rest of that particular language is the same. The actual description of what a constitutes a single lot or parcel is in subsection 7. But you have, so you have the 3 for 4, the lot of record. You have paragraph A, which is the not force a major change in or measurably increase the cost, just as it was in the B engrossed.
What 9, please?
On page 9, lines 26 through 28. Then you have on page 10, lines 1 through 4, is the exact same kind of language as I put in the marginal lands section, not prohibiting lots of record in the Willamette Greenway floodplain or geological hazard area as they are in the existing lot of record bill, but simply saying if there is one in one of those areas, they're also subject to the relevant local ordinances, which may or may not end up prohibiting it. But
excuse me, Madam Chair, it would help a lot if you use the lines you're talking about.
I'm sorry, page 10, lines 1 through 4. And then paragraph C on lines 5 and 6 is right out of the B engrossed version. Subsection 5, beginning on line 7, is the notice provision for a permit to build a house, a dwelling on a lot of record under subsection 4. It's changed to owners of land that are within 250 feet of the lot or parcel and persons who have requested notice of those kind of applications and who have paid a fee for that notice. So it is changed significantly from the B engrossed version. It takes out, there were a couple of qualifiers. One, that the land that was going to, the owner of land would only get notice if the land was within the EFU. And there were a couple other things having to do with whether they qualified for farm assessment. That was the other one. Those have been removed.
Yeah, Beth.
Elizabeth, on line 9, you have owners of land that are within 250 feet. Shouldn't that be is you are referring to? Thank you.
To be getting a little
we have
five.
We need the members for quorum. We have 5 people.
There are 35 of us here.
Only 9.
Are there 35 here? We will take a recess and I will announce on the floor after roll call we will be coming back. So this is a recess. Elizabeth, if we can take right off where we left off, and I apologize for you waiting, but we will probably be in and out.
Yanked out of here again.
Yanked out again.
Okay.
We were on page 10.
Page 10 in the notice provisions. I think I'd explained those, so we can move on.
Oh, I left my copy up.
Didn't we do this by conference call?